From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Even as Donald Trump's administration comes to an end, the president has revoked the term of one of his FCC commissioners, Michael O'Reilly, and offered up a man named Nathan Symington to replace him. The five-member Federal Communications Commission, currently headed by Ajit Pai, is tasked with making critical decisions on internet freedom, among other things. Under Mr. Pai's leadership, the battle over net neutrality was lost, but advocates say that Symington is even worse than Pai. As his nomination heads to the Senate for confirmation, we examine what's at stake in this little-noticed political fight in the last months of the Trump presidency. My guest is Evan Greer. She is the Deputy Director of Fight for the Future. Welcome to the program, Evan.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
So first, tell me why Michael O'Reilly was basically denied another term by Trump. This took place in all the way back in August.
Yeah, that's correct. So for folks who haven't been following this super closely, everyone's probably familiar with Ajit Pai, who is the sort of infamous chair of the FCC who was put in place by the Trump administration, who notoriously repealed net neutrality protections. But there's two other Republican members of the FCC who are sort of lesser known. And one of them was this guy, Michael O'Reilly. Now, he has a pretty terrible record on most of the issues that most of us care about, including net neutrality. He voted along with Ajit Pai to repeal those basic protections and allow companies like Comcast and Verizon to essentially abuse their gatekeeper power, their monopoly power, and dictate what we can see and do on the internet. But he diverged with the president on this very important issue related to Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which is sort of in competition with HIPAA for the most misunderstood law of 2020. So the Trump administration issued an executive order that would essentially blow up Section 230 and open the floodgates for widespread internet censorship by putting the FCC in charge of dictating social media companies' content moderation policies. Now, Trump did this because he is upset that companies like Twitter have, for example, put fact-checking notifications on his posts, things like that. He's essentially mad that social media companies are moderating too much. It's worth noting that Democrats have argued to get rid of Section 230 for the exact opposite reason. They're upset that social media companies aren't moderating enough. The reality is that getting rid of this law would basically destroy the fabric of the internet as we know it, all the good parts of the internet, while sort of amplifying the bad parts of the internet. And so Mike O'Reilly basically diverged with the Trump administration. He said, I think this executive order violates the First Amendment. And, while I may be a conservative FCC chair or commissioner, I do care about the First Amendment. And Trump essentially then summarily fired him by revoking his nomination, which is what brought us to this most recent nomination of Nathan Symington.
And actually, let me just read Section 230 for our audience. It says, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. It takes some time to sort of get into the weeds of this, but basically it means that Twitter and Facebook can't be sued if they, if content appears by users like you and I on their platform, and so it protects them from being sued on these issues, but it doesn't stop them from applying their own standards, right?
No, that's exactly right. In fact, it protects them when they do, and this is the really important piece of Section 230 that I think most people don't understand. It prevents companies from being sued for hosting the content that we upload. And really, we should think of that not as a protection for companies, but as a protection for all of us, right? That's the thing that allows us to upload a video of a police officer engaged in police brutality and know that that video will stay online because the police department can't sue Twitter for hosting it. That's also what protects me from getting sued for retweeting something that accuses that police officer of being a racist jerk. And so this is a protection primarily for the speech and creativity of individual internet users. And it's really sort of a mistake to think of it as a protection for the companies, which is really what we've sort of seen the mainstream press constantly refer to it as. They refer to it as, oh, this is a gift to Silicon Valley, or these special protections enjoyed by the big tech companies. The reality is that companies like Facebook and Google will be fine without Section 230. They have armies of lawyers. They can figure out how to navigate whatever new regulatory framework gets put in place. It's all the rest of us, all the alternative online sites and media sources and places where we can host our opinion and memes and graphics and videos, and sites like Wikipedia that are heavily reliant on volunteer moderators and editors. They're the ones that are going to get destroyed if we blow up this foundational law that has essentially made the internet into what it is, again, in the good sense of the way that we think about it. And again, it is also what enables companies to moderate as they see fit. So if you're someone that's concerned about the spread of hate speech and misinformation on the internet, you should be right here alongside us fighting against the repeal or gutting of Section 230, because that's what protects companies when they engage in good faith moderation.
And that's what Trump is against. So here comes Nathan Symington, a man that he has put up to replace Michael O'Reilly on the five-person FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. Of course, these decisions were taken in August, before Trump knew he lost the election, although it seems as though he still doesn't know it. So Nathan Symington is now facing a Senate confirmation hearing. Who is he and why are you worried about him? Your organization, Fight for the Future, has said he's even worse than Ajit Pai.
Yeah, and what's funny is when you say, who is he? I mean, that is a question that actually even Republicans in Washington, D.C. are asking, because this guy is really kind of a nobody. Beyond his politics, he is brand new. He's only really worked in this field for about 3 years. So he's also, beyond just the fact that he has taken terrible positions in the very short time that he has been in the field, he's just fundamentally completely unexperienced and clearly not even close to kind of credentialed enough for a position like sitting on the FCC, especially during this time, during a pandemic, when millions and millions of people are completely reliant on their internet connection for to go to work, to send their kids to school. We are in a time when people are more vulnerable to abuse by their internet service providers than ever before in history. And we need people sitting on the FCC who have real experience to deal with those problems. This guy, Nathan Symington, is a junior staffer at the NTIA, which is kind of a sub department within the FCC. And he's the one that actually helped draft the petition for the Trump administration's executive order to blow up Section 230 and put folks like Ajit Pai in charge of these social media companies' speech policies. So he's really someone that is far, far out there in terms of these convoluted attacks on internet freedom. And I'll note that at the very end of his Senate confirmation hearing earlier this week, he did confirm that he opposes net neutrality, that he agreed with Ajit Pai when he repealed those strong Title II protections that prevent internet service providers from exploiting all of us.
So let's talk about how the FCC is set up and what it means for the incoming Biden administration. There's five commissioners, and I believe the party that has the White House gets three out of five. They were appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate. And of course, then the party that has the White House is the one that gets the majority vote, right? And so how does Biden's incoming presidency change what we'll see at the FCC?
Yeah, so I mean, this is the fun part, is that we get to say goodbye to Ajit Pai. He at some point will have to step down as the chair of the FCC. I think it's unlikely that he will remain at the agency, because if he does, he'll basically just have to sit there and watch whomever the Biden administration appoints to that position undo all of the damage that he has done.
He automatically loses his chairmanship, right, when Biden comes in, because Biden is
a Democrat?
That is
exactly right. Okay. Yeah, he will have to step down as chair. Technically, he would be demoted to just be a regular commissioner. But again, I think it's likely that he will just leave the FCC. And then we will see a 3-2 majority, whomever the Biden administration appoints to be chair, the other two remaining Democratic commissioners. And then we'll have Brendan Carr, who's really cozied up to the Trump administration, and potentially Nathan Symington if he gets confirmed. But my guess is that he won't, that we can prevent his confirmation, and that we'll see the Republicans put forth somebody else who's kind of just as bad, but probably a bit more experienced. And then we'll be having to fight that nomination as well.
So who gets to decide who has to step off of the commission? Because it's a five-person job, 3 Republicans, 2 Democrats. When Biden takes office, it has to flip to 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans. There's got to be a new Democrat installed, and at least one of the 3 Republicans will, if they don't voluntarily step down, will have to be removed.
Yeah, that's correct. And the funny thing is that a lot of this tends to happen through, it's a little bit tradition as well as policy, right? It's customary that when a new administration comes in, the previous chair simply steps down. I imagine there is a process by which Congress could sort of remove someone if there was sort of a weird contested scenario. But generally, this is sort of one of those things in DC that's kind of, decided a bit through tradition or kind of old school gentlemanly agreements in the, nonsensical way that our country pretends it has them. But I would expect, regardless, that we will see Ajit Pai depart, at least as chair, if not completely from the FCC, and that, despite Joe Biden himself's ties to the telecom industry and the fact that Democrats, still overwhelmingly as a party do take a fair amount of money from the telecom companies, I'm very optimistic that they will appoint someone to the FCC who will restore net neutrality. We overwhelmingly won that debate. They know that it's incredibly popular with voters from across the political spectrum, and they know that it would be political suicide to appoint anybody to the FCC who wasn't committed to, as a very first thing, restoring those basic net neutrality protections that never should have been revoked in the first place.
And now, this week, congressional Democrats called on Ajit Pai to, quote, immediately stop work on all partisan controversial items in recognition of Joe Biden being president-elect. What is Ajit Pai himself doing right now? Are they engaging in this? Is the FCC under his leadership engaging in some sort of scorched earth policy?
We haven't seen much out of Ajit Pai since the elections. He's been tweeting a lot about sports and seems to be conspicuously silent on, the events of the world. And again, that's because he sort of knows that his time is up. He probably doesn't want to anger Trump before he is on his way out the door. But my guess is, that there's not a lot that they can do between now and Inauguration Day. There was some fear that if they did rush to confirm someone like Nathan Symington, they could quickly vote through this Section 230 executive order that we were talking about. At this point, I'm not seeing a lot of appetite for that in the Senate. I think, part of what's happening here is Republicans in the Senate are sort of keeping up this charade through whatever happens in Georgia. But I don't think they're in any particular rush to confirm someone who's essentially no more than a Trump crony, whose only qualification is his loyalty to an outgoing president.
How seriously in danger is Section 230 between now and January 20th?
I think between now and January 20th, we're fairly safe. But I would say that this battle over the future of Section 230 is the biggest and most imminent tech policy fight and threat that we have to address in the next 4 years. Trump has called to revoke to repeal Section 230. Joe Biden has also called to revoke it entirely, a policy that is outrageous, that has no support from experts on any side of the aisle. Anyone that actually understands what this law does would tell you it would be totally bonkers to repeal it entirely. That said, we also know Kamala Harris was a chief sponsor of SESTA-FOSTA, which was the last piece of legislation that amended Section 230, which has been widely labeled a disaster that really actually ended up harming the very people that it claimed to protect. So we know that this incoming administration actually has a pretty dangerous record on Section 230, and we've seen an increasing flurry of pieces of legislation from both Democrats and Republicans. Some of them are disingenuous, some of them are well-intentioned, but deeply misguided. But the reality is that we need to very quickly educate people about what this law really does and about the fact that blowing it up would make the internet a much worse place, not a better place. It won't solve any of the problems that you have with big tech. If you're concerned about the growing power of companies like Facebook and Google, I am too, and I'm here to tell you that blowing up Section 230 will make those monopolies even more powerful while getting rid of almost everything else that we like about the internet and that makes it a powerful, transformative force for our democracy.
My guest has been Evan Greer, Deputy Director of Fight for the Future, and we've been discussing Nathan Symington's nomination as a Republican FCC commissioner in the last months of the Trump presidency. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.